It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A Wisconsin workforce agency lands a federal grant to improve the transition from life in prison to life in the community. We explore how these funds may be used in job search strategies, occupational training, and securing long-term employment. As we discuss reentry, call in with a question, share a comment at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Jane Spencer is Executive Director of the North Central Wisconsin Workforce Development Board, located in Stevens Point, serving nine area counties. Jane, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Your organization was recently awarded this $4 million grant from the U.S. Department of Labor. Why did you apply for the Pathway Home 4 grant?
Well, we know that other workforce boards, there are 11 of us in the state of Wisconsin, have been involved in the Pathway Home grant in the past. And so when this announcement came out, we collaborated together to expand those services. We know in Wisconsin, there are approximately 41,000 individuals incarcerated in state institutions and county facilities. And with the worker shortage and the low unemployment rate, we believe that there are opportunities for these individuals to transition back to their communities and find meaningful employment with the assistance of the grant.
So with the assistance of this grant, how do you plan to use the funds?
Well, we locally, almost 700,000 of the money will stay here, and then we will subaward it out to seven other workforce boards in the state. And we will be working with our state institutions and our county facilities to identify individuals who are interested in the program. And we'll start with a pre-release working relationship, identifying their needs, what barriers they have to employment. So we'll start that working relationship. And then once they are released, we'll continue to work with them on, direct connections to employers in the region, connections to apprenticeship opportunities and occupational training, and then really support them through a coaching type model where we're not doing it for them, but we're coaching them along the way.
Approximately how many people could be served by the grant?
Our goal is to serve 800 during this period.
Is this a new direction for the workforce development agencies, or is this grant furthering work you're already doing?
This really is furthering the work that we're already doing. We serve individuals with and without criminal records in some of the other training programs that we provide, but this is really expanding that opportunity to reach them prior to their release.
We're talking about workforce reentry with Jane Spencer, Executive Director of the North Central Wisconsin Workforce Development Board. And you can join in with your questions, your comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in William Sultan now, president of the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin and its foundation, trial lawyer in Milwaukee, specializing in employment law. William, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. These grants from the U.S. Department of Labor, they say they're meant to help people with criminal records find employment, to avoid committing further crimes. How does employment help someone stay out of trouble?
Well, thank you. Employment is one of the component parts that is necessary for folks to have a successful life. One of the things that there's general consensus on is that having employment opportunities lowers recidivism because there is positive development, folks who are giving back to their community, giving back to their families, and really having that ability to earn and provide for themselves.
Recidivism being the tendency of a convicted person to reoffend, perhaps go back to prison. I'm wondering, sometimes I think the perception is, William, that landing the job, that it will fix many things, that, you know, maybe like employment is some magic wand, but what other aspects of a person's life must be worked out and worked on in that fragile transition state from moving from prison back to the community?
Well, we need to make sure that reentry is not limited to just one area, such as employment, but it also has to include getting back into their community, reconnecting with their families, reconnecting with traditions that they had before they went away to the prison system. And so we really need to have a full wraparound system for reentry, but employment is certainly an important aspect of that.
Jane, through this grant, will there be more ability to have those wraparound services?
We can provide supportive services to remove their barriers to employment. But I agree with William that there's much more than just employment. It's just the workforce boards are looking at this through the lens of workforce development. But we can certainly help individuals connect to some of those other resources.
Let's bring on a call. Susan joining us from Racine. Good morning, Susan. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, I have a question. I haven't heard it on this program, but I've heard on other programs that they are paying for college educations for people coming out of these criminal institutions, whereas law-abiding citizens have to go get school loans. I'm wondering if that's true, where they're giving them grants to get college educations. And my second question is that why is a $4 million program only helping 800 people?
Susan, thank you for calling in. Jane, can you address those questions?
Sure. So the $4 million grant will be dispersed across 7 different workforce boards. And a large part of that is staffing. We have to pay people to be the coach and provide that service. And we will be working with individuals to connect them, like I said, directly to employers, apprenticeship opportunities, and also occupational training. And like I said earlier, we work with people with and without records. If an individual is looking for that assistance to go back to school, I would advise them to visit their local job center because there are resources there for those individuals. So again, we're working with people with records and without.
William, we heard from Cindy and DePere and called in to say that Wisconsin, the correctional system, has ended all of the vocational programs for incarcerated people, and they really need to be restarted from Cindy's perspective. What impact do those types of programs have for a person transitioning back into the community?
Well, the programs are helpful because they provide the skill set that folks need to be successful on the job. That's one of the main concerns when I talk with employers, is that folks that are coming back into the community have been out of the workforce for a significant period of time, often years, and, you know, skills atrophy, or perhaps their skills haven't been developed. And so these vocational programs are critical.
Why might someone with a criminal record lose a job they get after they leave prison?
Well, what I can say is that the most common form of employment discrimination today is based on arrest and conviction record. And that comes from statistics from the Department of Workforce Development, as well as the Madison Equal Opportunities Division. It is the most frequently filed discrimination case in our state, which is why there has been such a push at the national level to have some federal legislation on this issue. Many employers believe that folks with conviction records are not as good of workers as folks who do not have a conviction record. which is simply not true. And background screening services are ubiquitous in employment applications. And the service providers, the companies that provide these services, use criminal convictions as a way of weeding out candidates. And they sell those services to employers.
Would people with a criminal record encounter employers who want to pay them less than what someone without having gone to prison would get in their paycheck?
Sure. I use the term discrimination as broadly as possible. So it's not just denying job opportunities, but it's also denying benefits and equal pay.
William Sultan is a trial lawyer, president of the ACLU of Wisconsin. Jane Spencer here leads the North Central Wisconsin Workforce Development Board in Stevens Point as we discuss federal funding to help meet the needs of incarcerated people in Wisconsin prior to release and after. Be part of this discussion along the way. Call in with a question. Share your perspective. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S. Department of Labor awards a Wisconsin Workforce Development Agency $4 million to help people reenter the workforce after being incarcerated. We learn how the Pathway Home 4 grant will be put to use in Wisconsin. And you can call in with a question or share your experience. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jane Spencer is Executive Director of the North Central Wisconsin Workforce Development Board, and William Sultan is President of the ACLU of Wisconsin. William, as you talk about wraparound services, what can ease the transition from prison into the community?
Well, I would say first, we need to have a extended supervision system that centers the a people-first strategy rather than using sort of the offensive labels of felon, offender, convict, which changes the lens by which we're treating people. But we must get them reintegrated with their families. We must get them reconnected with their communities, and we must get them services related to trauma and therapy as well as employment.
Catherine in Eau Claire called in to say that one of the most important things that needs to be considered here is to provide support for sobriety. Do you know what is being done in this area?
Well, I do know that the state does provide services related to alcohol and other drug abuse. I think it really depends on what the substance is. We have a lot of great science and medicine around, for example, medically assisted treatment for folks that suffer from opiate addiction. I think there are different specific treatments for alcohol abuse and other substances. And so we have to narrow that down. But we are delivering those services to folks.
Jane, how might your program help embed individuals into their community outside of the workplace?
It's that part of the post-release of connecting them to community resources. So that's going to be different in each area, but it's having the coaches be more aware of what those community resources are and making those connections for the individual.
Who might be an ideal coach as part of this grant? Who are you looking for?
Someone who has a passion for assisting these individuals, who understands that need to connect with their community and the importance of the resources and the families. Someone who has the knowledge of the system across the state would be very helpful.
In terms of the employers that you already work with, do you have conversations with them about how they go about hiring people who have criminal records? Or what do they tell you as you work to open up channels with different industries for people, you know, who have these backgrounds?
Mm-hmm. So we really try to highlight their skills and encourage the individual to be open about their history when they're talking to employers. When we are talking to employers, we are also doing that, highlighting what their skill sets are and that they're available to work and that they are, you know, interested in reconnecting with their community. So we know with our employers in the area, there are some who are very open to this and some who are not, but we are willing to put the time in to work with those who are open to this and, you know, look at this as a workforce or a labor pool that could help them with their businesses.
William, when you hear that, be open about your history, you know, that the prospective employer is bound to find out, you know, in some way about that record. What do you hear in those words? What is your take?
Sure. First, I would say that I would support a ban the box system where employers move beyond using criminal history as a barometer for employability. But certainly if an employer asks about criminal history, you know, the applicant should, you know, explain what that is truthfully. But I think it's a myth to say that employers learn about the actual facts. What they really learn about is the name of the charge and the conviction.
William Selton there, trial lawyer and president of ACLU of Wisconsin. Jane Spencer with us, executive director for the North Central Wisconsin Workforce Development Board, as we talk about workforce reentry. You can join in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Jane, the Labor Department says the grants are meant to support training that leads to industry recognized credentials in high demand industries as determined by local area needs. What are examples of high demand industries in Wisconsin?
Well, in our North Central region, manufacturing is a large part of our economy. Transportation, logistics, the automotive industry is important, as well as information technology and healthcare. There are other occupations as well, but those are our main drivers.
So in manufacturing, this goes beyond the assembly line. There are certainly other industries that require skill sets and training and expertise.
Correct. But there are also opportunities for entry level, and there are good jobs in our region. Hmm. But also that opportunity to upskill or reskill. And that's where the occupational training comes in. We work with our local universities and technical colleges and private training vendors to provide those skills.
How will you measure success in this program?
We will be looking at and will be measured by the Department of Labor on entered employment. Did they retain that employment? If they are put into a training program, did they get a credential for that? You know, and then those skill gains. And then long term, they will be looking at recidivism rates.
And so, Jane, what has been the reception from other workforce development boards around the state to a program like this?
The other boards, other boards have been involved in this previously and have had good experiences. And so that was one of the reasons why we wanted to join their efforts and become the grant lead in this case. It is something that's needed across the state. It is a resource that we can provide to our employers.
Jane, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Jane Spencer, Executive Director of the North Central Wisconsin Workforce Development Board based in Stevens Point. President of ACLU of Wisconsin, William Sultan, stays with us as we continue this conversation about reentry to communities after incarceration and the barriers upon release. You can call in with a question, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. From the latest Department of Corrections census, there are more than 21,000 people in Wisconsin prisons. And according to the agency's prison release dashboard, thousands of people are released each year. We examine what it is like for incarcerated individuals to return to their Wisconsin communities. And you can be part of the conversation. Call in with a question, add a comment. 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. William Sultan is president of the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin. Let's bring in a caller. Sandra is in Port Washington. Hi, Sandra, go ahead.
Good morning. I just wanted to encourage prospective employers and the communities of formerly incarcerated people to think about the credible data that shows 40% of the people who have been incarcerated and indicted are innocent of the crime that they are accused of, and either because of a plea bargain or contextual circumstances, they were assumed guilty rather than assumed innocent. And this is part of our justice system that has made it very difficult for people for our law enforcement to admit the errors they make. But if a prospective employer is considered this very real probability, it would be to the benefit, I think, of everyone.
Sandra, thank you for calling in. William, from your perspective as a trial lawyer, what comes up from those comments?
Well, let me say, I'm not aware of a specific percentage of folks who are innocent who are in our prison systems, but certainly there are too many. I'll say that. It's, of course, the job of trial lawyers to ensure that people who are accused of crimes get a fair trial, get a fair shake in the criminal justice system. As a trial lawyer in this state, I certainly believe in our justice system and have found that it works.
Let's discuss terminology here. The Marshall Project focuses on producing criminal justice journalism, and the organization says using the word inmate when referring to a person, even if technically it's true, it should be avoided. What do you make of that policy and other terminology?
I couldn't agree more. A study by Ford U.S. shows that using terms like felon, offender, inmate, convict is not viewed neutrally. In their survey, respondents who used people first language, such as formerly incarcerated or justice involved, there was a much more neutral response, such as needs rehabilitation, made a mistake, is redeemable, right? And so I think it's important that we use neutral language in the media specifically, but also in our government agencies.
The Prison Policy Initiative says that the majority of people involved in Wisconsin's justice system are on probation or parole. Does that rate reflect the people you work with?
Absolutely. There are simply too many people who are under government supervision, whether it's parole, probation, or our extended supervision system. It's just too many folks, and we really should rethink that.
So parole, the a form of early conditional release from prison, probation, period of supervision that's ordered by a court instead of incarceration, in lieu of incarceration. From what you've seen, does it help these types of supervision? Do they help an individual stay out of prison? Do they actually help people get back on their feet?
No. And Wisconsin abolished its parole system, I think, in the early 2000s and created an extended supervision system. And one of the problems with that is that courts have used it in lieu of shorter prison sentences. So what I mean by that is, you know, there's a sense in the court system that lengthy extended supervision sentences are preferable. And so you have folks who are on extended supervision for really grossly long periods of time.
Could be years, could be decades, perhaps even
right,
their life.
Often, right, and they're often subjected to revocation, not for having committed a similar crime or any crime, but for violating a rule of supervision. For example, consuming alcohol, hanging out with someone else who happens to be a felon, not getting permission to work a certain job, not being employed, things like that. And it's just really onerous, and it affects people's ability to be successful upon reentry.
How are Black and brown people treated in these forms of extended supervision?
Well, we know that BIPOC individuals make up a larger percentage share of the criminal justice system as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that there are racial biases in how the criminal justice system is meted out. And certainly it's the case that they have higher rates of being revoked. And I believe that many of them would say that they feel that they are discriminated against.
We're talking about workforce reentry with William Sultan, trial lawyer and president of the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin. You can join in the conversation at any point, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I want to just touch on something you just said about extended supervision, that you see people incarcerated for violating the supervision rules, like you mentioned, drinking or being in a bar, but it's not new convictions. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, that is exactly right. I would even go so far as to say that most folks who are revoked by their ES agent is due to a violation of a rule of supervision as opposed to an actual new crime. So these are often folks who have not been charged with any new crime.
That means that that's not breaking the cycle of incarceration. That's adding to it.
Correct. The extended supervision system is an extension of the prison system. I want to make that clear. They're not two different things.
Mm.
And oftentimes, the ES agents have incredible power, for example, putting folks on electronic monitoring, determining where they can and cannot work, where they can and cannot live, where they can and cannot go to school, who they can and cannot associate with.
Tying this to workforce, is it difficult to meet the terms of extended supervision without a reliable income, without stable housing, stable people around you? Can you make the connections there?
Well, absolutely. I mean, formerly incarcerated people need to work in order to earn a living just like everyone else. And they're often required, for example, to pay supervision fees. So we find them on top of finding them. And not paying supervision fees can be a violation of the rules as well. And so not having stable employment, which many formerly incarcerated folks do not have because employers are discriminating against them, affects all the things that you mentioned: housing, ability to provide for a family, which impacts, someone's mental state. You know, people who are unable to provide for their families often experience depressive moods, and that is detrimental to their health.
ballpark how much are supervision fees here in Wisconsin?
Well, it depends on how long you're on supervision, but we're talking thousands, not tens of thousands.
Okay. Going back to the Wisconsin Fair Employment Law, prohibiting discrimination in employment based on someone's criminal record, how well is this law enforced?
Not well. Like many anti-discrimination laws, they depend on private attorneys enforcing the law. And in 2010, when Governor Walker was in office, they gutted the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act. So the remedies that were previously available for damages like emotional distress and punitive damages are no longer available under the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act. And because there's no federal protection, the incentive for private attorneys to take on these cases is much less. And because that incentive isn't there, you have fewer lawyers who are bringing the cases, which emboldens the discrimination that the law was designed to eviscerate.
Does the Fair Employment Law say how background checks may be used?
So there are two sources of law, one being the actual statute itself, mm-hmm. And then the decisions for the Labor Industry Review Commission. Certainly employers may conduct criminal background screens. What the law says is that you cannot discriminate against somebody on the basis of a conviction record unless that conviction is substantially related to the job duties and responsibilities. The actual greatest source of law that we have on background screens actually comes from the Fair Credit Reporting Act, believe it or not. Courts have interpreted the Fair Credit Reporting Act as requiring background screens are consumer reports that require FCRA notification. So when you, if you have a criminal background and you apply for a job and you consent to a criminal background screen, a requirement of the FCRA, if an employer intends to discriminate against you, they have to send you both a pre-adverse action letter and an adverse action letter explaining the reasons why you were denied that job opportunity. So in many of these cases, there's no guesswork, right? The employers admit that that's the reason they don't have the job. The problem with the Wisconsin Fair Employment Law and the Fair Credit Reporting Act is that the remedies for those violations are not high enough to deter employers from the discrimination.
President of the ACLU of Wisconsin, trial attorney William Sultan with us as we discuss reentry services, efforts to equip incarcerated people with a plan for when they're released from prison. Call in with a question, share a comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the Department of Corrections, thousands of people are released from Wisconsin prisons each year, and we learn how to better support formerly incarcerated individuals. You can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question. Add your perspective. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. William Sultan is a trial lawyer and president of ACLU of Wisconsin. William, we heard from Mary in Greenfield called in, and Mary's brother-in-law is trying to find subsidized housing for seniors, and Mary's brother-in-law was incarcerated earlier in life, keeps getting denied. Is there anything that can be done legally to help Mary's brother-in-law?
Yes. Being denied housing can, in some circumstances, lead to a legal claim. But even if it doesn't lead to a claim in court, I think getting a lawyer involved to deal with landlords like that can often lead to positive outcomes.
Let's go to Brad now in Cambridge. Brad, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What would you like to bring up?
Just a general comment. I've taken my opportunity to let this response off air, but as a graduate of supervision programs and as somebody who's tried and struggled to get my life together for a long time, in listening to this, as I sat there and hearing a statistic about like about 40% of people, you know, maybe aren't guilty of the crimes they've been committed of. Well, I never sat there. I mean, I sat there with 100% of people saying they didn't deserve to be there, but about all of them can be details about what they did to get there. And so I struggle with the statistics, especially somebody that went through the program itself, because I know that I made certain decisions, and those decisions were incongruous with the laws of the United States government, and I ended up in a supervision program in lieu of being in jail longer. And because of that, I had to pay fees, and I had to pay fines, and I can't go to a bar, and I can't drink alcohol. And I agreed to all these rules ahead of time. And so getting in trouble, if I get violated for drinking when I'm on parole or probation, that's my own fault because I chose to break the law again. And so I struggle here because when what I really wanted to do and what I really see is a viable path forward is providing solutions that give accountability and help people grow instead of giving them more excuses to make excuses. And so as a graduate of the program, I wanted to push the ACLU a little bit to give more context on, you know, can't we call a spade and say a lot of these people are where they should be for a reason? And how do we help them grow and return as people who contribute to society and don't make the same mistakes and don't violate instead of making excuses and saying that they shouldn't violate? Thanks.
Brad, if you're still there. Oh, I think we've lost Brad. I'm going to turn to William and to respond to those comments.
Sure, and I appreciate the comments, but the simple fact of the matter is there are too many people in prison. Prison does not deliver on its promise of correcting behavior, and we've learned that over the last 100 years. It just simply isn't true. It is true that people commit crime, and it is true that we need to address the root causes of crime, but prison simply is not the best tool for that. And certainly it's the case that people who are on, that some folks who are on extended supervision do commit new crimes. And I suppose that there are some that probably where revocation is warranted. But to have it with a broad brush like that, I think is simply incorrect. We have to include wraparound services that deal with the root causes for each person on an individualized basis. We need to have a system that deals with prevention, diversion, trauma-informed care, and other culturally specific needs in order for that person to be successful. And I'm glad that Brad found those services and has become successful.
You know, taking the words that Brad said, how do you find accountability? How do you grow as a person after committing an offense? That is, I would imagine, unique and different for every person.
I do believe it should, you know, it's an individualized analysis for sure. But Brad is wrong in this sense. Most people who are in prison today in Wisconsin and elsewhere around the country are there because they did accept personal responsibility. They pled guilty. So that is, you know, a simple form of accepting responsibility. And many of them did that knowing they would be sent to prison, knowing they would get probation, knowing they would get extended supervision time. So it's incorrect to say that people have not accepted responsibility. And I think that's important. I think the question is, what do we do as a society to make sure that they're successful? Because most of us agree that just because somebody commits a crime doesn't mean they should be in prison for the rest of their life. And because of that, we have a responsibility to make them successful. And we do that with full wraparound services, including employment opportunities.
William Sultan with us, trial lawyer and president of the ACLU of Wisconsin. Let's bring in Rachel in Fond du Lac. Rachel, hi, you're a former social worker?
I am, yes. And thank you for having these types of programs. I think they're so important for the public to know about. Yes, I was a social worker at several prisons. And one of the things that I found in my work experience in preparing the what we call the PX now, persons in our care, for reentry into the community is that there was such a disconnect for most of these individuals with the kind of structural environment that they came from, then going back into the community, and some of the persons in our cares that we dealt with had lengthy sentences, so they were expected to go back into the community, going out and doing what they needed to do, but they really didn't have those resources. And I do know that some of the individuals did receive some of these wraparound services that the guest is talking about, but for a very large percentage of the population, they didn't get those services. And of course, those were only available to those that had mental health needs. So, you know, that's one of the issues. And I also think, too, that probation and parole agents are expected to do a lot for little pay. And so, you know, there's that issue as well. Thank you.
Rachel, thank you so much for calling in with a perspective there, being so close to this topic. William, what would you like to address there that Rachel brought up?
Yeah, I agree with Rachel's comments, which is why the $4 million grant that we've been discussing is so important. You know, not just because it's $4 million, but because it's targeted. And I think we need more help in that area from the federal government and from the state, and also from private organizations and philanthropists in order to solve this problem. I mean, we are experiencing a lack of resources for a large group of people in our society. And I think by delivering those resources, we can get better outcomes and lower crime.
Do the Pathway Home 4 grant and other reentry programs adequately address problems associated with workforce reentry in our final moments here together?
Well, they fall short, but they are helpful, right? Mm. And I think we need to better resource them in order to get better outcomes, but they are certainly helpful, and but we're struggling.
Is the Corrections Department workforce challenges a challenge here as you look to try to have those wraparound services? You know, is that an issue?
Certainly. As Rachel mentioned, I think, you know, the low pay for employees is problematic for staffing. And I do know that DOC is experiencing some staffing challenges. I'm not sure that pay is the only thing that would increase those numbers, but it's certainly a factor.
William, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Attorney William Sultan is president of ACLU of Wisconsin and its foundation. And earlier, we talked with Jane Spencer, executive director of the North Central Wisconsin Workforce Development Board, awarded a Pathway Home 4 grant from the U.S. Department of Labor. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.